Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week I've handed the reins over to Grace and Granger from Spark University Sunderland, where our latest Foot in the Door event took place. You'll hear them chatting to people who took part in the day, starting with Karen and Steve from Hits Radio 90s. Over to you, Grace and Granger.
Hello, Granger.
Hello, Grace.
What are we doing today?
We are the leading two podcast people for the Radio Academy podcast for Foot in the Door 2025.
We are. So what are you looking forward to today?
Talking to people in the industry, getting that a piece of advice, maybe even getting a few contacts here and there.
Maybe. I'm really, really excited, especially for the speech-based content slot. I'm looking forward to that. I feel like it'd be very helpful. That's kind of my thing. But I am so excited just to meet as many people as I can, make those connections. And I know it sounds cliche, but literally just getting to know other people also trying to get into this industry.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of other stations from the Northeast. We've got NSR here, as well as us from Spark and Purple Radio as well, all in the Northeast. You know, we barely even see them half the time. So it's good to go out and see these people who work in the same industry, looking at the same jobs and things like that, and just knowing them.
What's really special as well is we do have a couple of little collaborations coming up, so that'll be quite nice to then get to put a face to the name. And of course, hopefully, fingers crossed, they are going to be the people that we are working with in the future.
Yeah, let's crack on the day and hope you enjoy the 2025 Foot in the Door Radio Academy podcast.
We are here at the Foot in the Door event for the Radio Academy, and what I was wondering specifically for you, Karen, first of all, is you did mention this in the talk that you've just done, but I was wondering as well, you must have quite a unique perspective from not only someone who's from the Northeast, but a woman in the Northeast starting a career in radio 25 years ago. How was that experience?
I'll be honest, it's a long time ago. I can barely remember. No, I can. And I remember being really daunted at the time because there weren't that many role models. But Annie Nightingale, the role model of all role models, you know, the first woman in radio. If you've not read her book, Wicked Speed, I can really recommend it. And her ethos was very much like ours, like you'll do, make yourself like available, be the dog's body, make the tea, make sure you then learn how to edit, you can drive a desk, you can run whatever. And she just made sure she knew how to do everything in radio so that when there was someone, a gap, there was someone not there to do a show, I can do it, can you? And she was in. So yeah, and of course times have changed now. There's lots of fantastic women in radio, but yeah, it's certainly different.
You mentioned it a bit earlier on in that talk, that switch from local to national, does that affect your prep in any way of like that you need to maybe still hit that Northeast connection, but still hit that national side?
I don't think so. I think if something's relevant, it's relevant. And we just try and keep it real and relevant. If it's interesting to us, it'll be interesting to our audience. The only thing we possibly try and do is maybe temper our language a little bit if it's a really local term that people aren't going to understand. And we try and remind each other of that, don't we, Steve?
We do, yeah. It has been a learning curve for us as well, you know, and it's, you do have to kind of sometimes stop when you close the mic and go, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said it in that way. I should have maybe diluted it a bit. But then you think, well, all right, if I'm diluting it a bit, I'm not being real anymore. So you've just got to kind of just be a little bit careful with your language.
And what would you say the process is, or you might not even be aware of it, but to keep the relationship like on air, still fresh and still entertaining after so many years together?
We genuinely love each other. I love Karen. I couldn't, you know, I'm not just saying that because she's here next to us. No, I do. I think it's really important. I think trusting each other is a massive thing. Being honest with each other. I don't take it personally if Karen says, Steve, I don't think I wouldn't have done it that way. That's good because it means that Karen's listening and we're always pushing each other. We're proud of what we do. We never give up. We've still got the same passion, if not more, than what we had when we first started. And most importantly, we're still learning. Always. We're always learning.
Definitely. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, we had that real luxury of organically growing our relationship because we weren't just put together as a double act. We had that bit of time, but we're still, like Steve says, it might not sound genuine, but it is. We still message each other all day, every day, probably just about what we're having for a tea or whether we've had a nap or not. But, you know, because we're our mates and we know each other's family and friends, and they keep you really grounded and they keep your relationships real as well, don't they? So, yeah, we're very lucky.
Obviously, you mentioned that you're really close friends. Does that ever affect the planning process of like, oh, you've said this earlier on last night, but like, do we mention that on air or not?
I think, again, it's about being open and honest. And Steve would know, for example, that although I've been married for 10 years next year and together with my husband for the last 20 years, I don't think I've ever mentioned his name on air. He really wouldn't be comfortable with that. And Steve's aware of that and he wouldn't cross that boundary. Whereas Steve's wife, you have mentioned her name, but she's comfortable. We wouldn't do anything that would make the other uncomfortable.
Yeah, like I've got to be careful with my wife because she reads the news on the telly. Some of the listeners know that. So again, I've got to be careful what I talk about because... like, obviously, she's got a proper job and I don't.
You don't want to affect her career.
It has been known. We've been doing the show and Steve's looked at his phone and went, right, let's just move on. Oh, has Amy messaged? Yes, I possibly shouldn't have said that. But generally, we know where the line is and we're careful to keep to it.
Thank you for giving us your time. No, we really
cheers,
appreciate
guys.
It.
Really nice to meet you.
Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
You too. I'm with Gina Marshall. And first question, you've just done a talk there about being an executive producer. What kind of steps did you take for that journey and what made you want to be that producer?
So the best way I can answer it is why I wanted to be an exec and why I wanted to get into management is because when I first started out in radio, in commercial radio, and I was like hospital radio 16, first proper radio job in a commercial radio station. When I was 19 years old, I worked at Radio City in Liverpool as a co-presenter, and everybody around the board table were guys. And it's fair enough, like it's fine, but there were times where you just want to see or speak to a female, or I didn't see any female role models. I didn't have any female managers. So I was at Radio City, then moved to a lot of different commercial radio stations where the whole tier of management above me were always guys. And I kept thinking, do you know why I want to be in that seat? And also I was so ambitious, like I was super ambitious as a kid. And I would argue against the playlist. I would argue against content on a daily basis. I'd say it's not good enough. We need to change this. We need to do this. And I kept thinking, do you know, I want to be in that seat. I really want that seat. I remember once I was working for Metro Radio and I left work and I went to the pub with a few friends and I was having a wine with my friend Anne Marie. She went, what do you want? I want to run that station across the road. She went, you want to run Metro Radio? I says, I want to run it. I says, because I know I'll do it better. And then I ended up running it because it was just in me. Like, I wanted to do it so badly. And it was the best thing ever when I got to actually run a radio station. It's not as easy as what I thought it was going to be, but it was great fun.
Would you say that having that self-belief and that confidence, even if it's just a quiet confidence in your abilities, is important? And to anyone who doesn't naturally have that, how do you suggest that they work on that or build it?
I wouldn't say I'm the most confident person in the world. I mean, you might have heard my speech then that I did, and I talk far too fast, hence why I'm not on air. And I do get nervous in front of big crowds. I'm quietly confident in myself because I know I'm really good at what I do, but I know that because I've been doing it for such a long time now. I'm guessing maybe back then not. I'll tell you why I had the fire in my belly is because I said to somebody at work, I want to be a program director. And he was like, what? Like, you want to be a program director? And that's all I needed. And that's all I ever need sometimes, for someone to go, really? And I go, okay, watch me. And I think that's like, everyone probably has their own little like ignitions that would spurt them on. And for me, it's that when someone goes, you can't, I'll go, okay, I will. So I kind of just need people to keep telling me that I can't, and then I'll do more.
To someone who's listening of being like, they're a producer, but they're working with someone bigger, better, or maybe no more. How does that producer then input their own ideas and like kind of not overstep their mark, but input their own ideas onto that show?
It's all about timing. Like, it's about timing. I'll use this one example. I remember taking on a show in the Northeast. It was a talk show. It was called Alan Robson's Night Owls. It's been on air for about 26 years when I started it. It finished in about 38. It was a staple show in the Northeast. Like, you knew who Alan Robson was. People would go into the school playground and go, oh my God, did you hear Alan Robson last night? It was a talk show. He had the most bonkers callers, but the most incredible callers. And he also did ghost hunts. And I went on that show. That show had the biggest market share of any commercial radio station show ever in the UK. Not Breakfast, him, Night Owls did. And it dropped. It fell off the charts. He was like, you'd have people calling up going, hi Alan, I've got Jaws 1, Jaws 2, Jaws 3 DVD collections, and let me talk you through my cassettes. And he would let them just talk about all the cassette collection. And I went in and I went, 6 months, I'll keep your mouth shut. 6 months, I'll learn the show, I'll learn him, I'll know exactly how he eats, breathes, does everything. I'll learn the show, and then I'll put a bomb on it and I'll blow it up and I'll make it into something different. 6 months passed. I changed the production. I banned all the regular callers. I banned all of his features. I brought new IDs in, new imaging in, new beds in. I scripted his links. I made them slicker. Do you know what happened? Rage I went up. And do you know what happened? I won all of those awards. And if I hadn't won them awards, I wouldn't have got to the jobs I got now. And he hated me for it. And he used to make me cry in the bathroom. He'd scream at me in the studio, scream at us. And he'd like slam things down and I'd go in the bathroom and I'd cry and I'd come back and I'd be like, sort yourself out, Alan. We've got a show in 10 minutes. And when I left that station, he cried and made a speech and he went, he didn't want me as a producer because I was a female, first and foremost. I was interviewed and he went, I don't want her because she's a female, which obviously made me want it even more because, you know, if I get told I can't, I will. And then he was like, and she's the only producer I've never made cry, which I thought was an odd thing to say. And I thought, no, you, and most nights I was crying in that bathroom.
At least he didn't know it.
Yeah, but he didn't know. I did it in secret. Just mascara, just running down. It's like a new look.
Well, thank you very much for your
time. No worries. Thank you.
It's good luck with everything. Thank you very much.
Hi, Caden.
Hello.
We are here with not only a student, but our very own head of programming.
Indeed, that is me.
What do you think is the most special thing about having things like this come up to not only the Northeast, but to Sunderland?
I found it really good, I can't lie. It's nice seeing some familiar faces, getting to meet other people from local stations. That was a big thing, because I don't think there should be any competition between local stations. It should be a big, more community style, so we've been working on some collabs. That'll be really exciting. But it's been really good. I've spoken to a lot of people, heard some fantastic stuff, some great advice. I think the best part about these days is always just being able to have a chat with one of the people outside of the actual hall that they're speaking in, grabbing them in a corridor, grabbing them while they're getting a coffee and just picking their brain a bit.
Get the home address. Yeah.
do what Steve Curran said this morning, be like, turn up to their place.
And Karen very quickly was like, no, do not turn up at a workplace. But yeah, being that person who's going to make the effort to speak to someone really does kind of make the difference, I feel. Who do you think the best person that you've spoken to, or maybe not the best person, but maybe the best advice you've had from today?
You know what? I think it's something that a lot of people have said. It was from Shaq, and I was asking, you know, radio, it's a very self-motivated industry, especially when you're at the student and community level, and it's something you've really got to push yourself to do. And when you are in those lulls and you're feeling demotivated or like you're not going to make it, what do you do? And he was just saying, you know, like, there's going to be those times, but you've got to put out time for yourself, take a little break, and just keep going, keep pushing, because if you keep trying, eventually you're going to get there.
For anyone who's listening who is a student, what a piece of advice would you give students out there who are looking to get into that audio business?
Just dive in straight away, and if you don't know where to, somewhere like Spark, you know, it's a welcoming place. We've got a lot of experts here, like Richard, Barry, Scott McGurty, some great people you can speak to, Jay Sykes even. They'll give you advice, give you a place to start, whether it is just doing something on Spark or any other local station. Getting into that, finding out, speaking to experts, trying to figure out actually what it is you want to do.
A lot of people, especially when you first start, you're worried about putting your stuff onto your Instagram, or you're worried about setting up that TikTok, because you think that little part of you that still like thinks you're at school is like, oh my god, people are gonna laugh at me. Nobody is gonna judge you. Nobody's looking at you thinking, why are they doing that?
Well, this is the thing. It's a rule that I live by, is, you know, don't live your life worrying about being judged by boring people. It doesn't matter. I don't care what, you know, within reason, what other people think. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to be myself, whether that's seen as cringe or over the top or whatever. I don't care at the end of the day. If I'm being myself, that's what I want to do, and you shouldn't care what anyone else thinks.
Myself and Granger are here with Chris North. What got you into the role that you currently have? Why did you get into talent management?
I got into talent management because I was at my student radio station and I was station manager, and I was probably jack of all trades, master of none. But what I knew I was good at was putting the teams together. And I say good at it, I enjoyed doing. I got better at it. And then when I ended up working for a company called Wise Buddha, I was basically a PA. And over time, I was putting things in people's diaries and I was dealing with stuff like that. And I think I didn't realise that talent management was sort of an extension of that, of people's lives and making sure they're in the right places at the right time. I've always enjoyed working with new presenters and getting them through that process. I know they're much better than I am at presenting, and I can help them navigate the language that they have to go through. But at the same time, it's not just about presenters. I like working across the Student Radio Association projects that we do and the Radio Academy projects that we do to get people who are not just about being on air, the people who make the content, who are marketeers, who are social media people, who are just content creators or you know, the tech people. Those are as important to me in terms of the ecosystem of the audio sector as being the presenter. And I just like being with those people who give them the opportunities or to just help them.
So you've been in this industry for like since you were 15, teenagers. Yeah. you must have seen it all now. So what are you looking for in a new talent for you to sign, and what opportunities can you then give them after you've saw that initial talent?
Oh, there's never a set answer to this question, because each agent and talent manager is different and have different approaches. But mine is to find people who are genuinely themselves. And I think once you are genuinely yourself on air and off air, which I'm very lucky to have worked with lots of those people, then you can just create the path that is right for them. People's lives change, you know, people get married, move house, go to different parts of the country, but they're still as talented. So it's about finding the pathway that's going to make them happy and fit with their lives, but at the same time deliver the things that they do for a living. If you're not yourself as a presenter, it can be quite exhausting, because you'll burn out because you're performing all the time.
People who might be feeling a little bit perturbed about not getting the job that they wanted, no matter what level that's on, what advice would you give to someone in that position at the moment?
Keep going. If you really want to do this, you'll just keep going. It might not be the right job that you're doing at the moment, or it might be that you have a different ambition and you're just not there yet. The whole point about foot in the door is to be in an environment where you realise there are more than just the one opportunity. To be through that door and the other side of it, and then make from it what you will, that's the process. None of us go into this and end up straight away in the place we're supposed to be forever. I never thought there would be a job called talent management. I had no idea. It's what I do now, and it's, to me, it's like a really natural thing that you've asked me about my career. And I didn't say to my person at school, I want to be a talent manager. I didn't know what that was, but I wanted to work in this sector, and that's what I did. And so the reason why I've been doing it for a long time, I've been lucky to be able to work in different radio stations, work in production companies, work for the Radio Academy, and I've gathered experience as I've gone, and I've worked out what I'm good at and I've worked out what I'm not good at. I heard Helen Thomas and Mike Cass say it earlier. None of us would ever regret any of the parts of our career, because we've learned from every single moment. So if you are starting out this career, don't think of the end game. Think about being in it. And that's the most important thing. And if you've got that energy and drive, you're going to be fine. You know, about 100 people have turned up today to learn that and to be part of that and to be with some incredible industry leaders, you know.
I think something as well that's really special, not only about foot in the door, but also about conference and all that kind of thing, what is so brilliant is that not only are you networking with people who are currently in the industry and leading in some areas of that, but you're also working with people who you're going to be working with in the future when those people are in those jobs. And I feel like that's a really special thing, because you're creating those relationships going forward.
I totally agree with you, because you never know who you're sitting next to in these events, and yeah, they will be your peers, you know, they will be the people you will work with, and you only know that when you look back.
A big thank you to Grace and Granger from Spark University of Sunderland for guest hosting the podcast from our Foot in the Door event in Sunderland. Keep an eye on our website for more Foot in the Door events for 2026. Applications for our RAMP mentoring scheme for 2026 have now opened. This is a six-month programme for mid-career professionals in the radio and audio industry who are ready to take the next step in their career. To find out more and to apply, go to radioacademy.org/mentoring. Next week on the podcast, my guest is Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics, talking about changing our mindset around AI. I'll see you next week.